and didn't cause a single serious casualty among the men and women in the Institute. Ryan heard a voice bellowing, and he recognized it as being that of Red Jack Yovo. It was a disappointment that their trap had failed to chill the pirate gang's leader.
What'll he do now? Maybe he'll go away.
Ryan touched a finger to his cheek, where a tiny shard of wood had nicked the skin and drawn a bead of blood.
No. No, he won't.
They've taken dreadful losses, Mr. Carter. Surely they'll see sense. See that we aren't a ripe peach to be easily plucked.
No, that's not how it works. A man like Yovel has control through fear and power. He backs off from us and he's lost his authority.
Ryan's right. Yovel might as well suck his blaster as retreat from us. He'll come in again, soon.
It didn't take long. Having lost his most potent weapon, as well as the small wag, with probably a quarter of his total force, Yovel had to rethink his strategy. There was no point in the mindless sacrifice of sending in a skirmish line over 100 yards of fairly open ground against armed defenders who'd gunned them down from the safety of good cover. Yovel chose to wait for the arrival of his seaborne forces, knowing that this would compel Ryan to divide his limited power and weaken the frontal defenses of the Institute. The pirates went to ground, crawling through the dunes, occasionally offering a burst of sniper fire to keep the frustrated defenders pinned down. It was a desultory few minutes, with nobody taking a serious wound, with the exception of a skinny pirate with one arm, who made the mistake of showing himself for a moment too long. He was rewarded with a .38 caliber bullet through the chest from Mildred's EKR-551. Yovel, and the last of his wags, had retreated toward the ribboned remains of Highway 1, reappearing on foot, his brilliantly crimson shirt and pants making him conspicuous among the rolling sandhills. Ryan tried 2 shots at him with the Steyr, but the pirate baron was too wily, burrowing into the dips and hollows, gradually worming his way nearer.
Not so good.
Sitting with his back to the wall, JB held the Uzi in his lap. It wasn't the right weapon for that kind of cautious firefight, any more than the Smith & Wesson M4000 12-gauge that lay at JB's side.
You want to hold here while I go out and take a look around the harbor?
Sure, Ryan.
Can I come, Dad?
Yeah. If there's a message to bring back to JB, you can carry it.
Tomlin grabbed at Ryan's sleeve, nearly pulling him off his feet.
You can't leave us!
Do that again and you can pick teeth out of the back of your throat. We're checking out those boats that were coming our way. Those sons of bitches up front aren't going to rush us.
Suppose you're wrong!
Suppose I am. What the hell difference will it make, Tomlin? They still got a big edge over us, and if their boats come in and they take possession of the quayside area, then we're in deeper shit than I care to think about.
Ryan turned his back on the scientist and moved quickly away from the entrance of the Institute, Dean jogging at his heels. Ryan bumped into Miranda, who was walking quickly away from the docks toward him, the tension in her eyes reflecting her obvious worry.
Ryan, I was coming to see you.
What? You sent out some dolphins to try to wreck the boats before they reach us?
No, that's what I was going to tell you.
From where he stood, Ryan could see across the quayside into some of the pens. Every one of them held a dolphin, swimming around and around, thrashing the water into foam, showing every sign of disturbance.
They know something, is that it?
They won't go. Nothing will make them. I tried the electric prods and the goads. I've never known them to refuse like this.
They say anything? Hey, I can see one of the boats out and more of that stinky smoke.
Ryan looked, distracted for a moment from Miranda. The original cloud had long dissipated, but Dean was right. This was like a prairie fire, covering a quarter of the horizon, as yellow as corruption, soaring higher than an eagle's wing. Far beneath it, dwarfed by the great column of smoke, was a small boat heading directly toward them.
The dolphins knew about that.
How do you mean?
She gripped Ryan by the arm, her fingers digging in so hard that it made him wince.
We get quakes and stuff all the time around the Keys, all the time.
So? What's different now?
Somehow he knew what she was going to say. An atavistic primitive sense seeped into Ryan's mind, filling him with something that lay partway between awe and fear.
This time it's big, Ryan. So big that it could be the end of everything. The pirates out there and the Keys and us all.
What have the dolphins been saying?
You know that the language we use and the way they seem to visualize things are totally...
Cut the science crap, Miranda. What is it?
They see darkness and a shaking and the fabric of the waters parting. Fires and a great rising of the sea. That's the nearest I can get to it. Just like the end of the fucking world, Ryan.
As he sprinted toward Christy and the rest of the group, Dean panting behind him, Ryan distinctly felt a strong tremor shake the earth beneath his feet. The shooting had stopped, as though both sides were aware of external forces beginning to threaten them all. Christy turned as Ryan joined her.
I've never felt anything as powerful as this.
The smell of burning sulfur had drifted across the quay, filling the nostrils and making the eyes prickle. The dawn had turned to dusk, with clouds towering in the eastern sky, blotting out the light, erasing all shadows.
Upon my soul, it's looking uncommonly like the end of the world.
Ryan staggered, nearly falling as the ground rocked, then gave a savage jerk to left and right, throwing him against the main gate. Every single pane of glass in the place disintegrated simultaneously as walls and ceilings trembled and flexed. The air was filled with a deafening roar that swamped the ears with sounds so intense and painful that Ryan pressed his hands to his head, then looked at his fingers, expecting to see them clotted with blood. Ever since the great nukings of 2001, the planet had been struggling to get itself back into kilter. But the deep-seated damage to the tectonic plates of Earth wasn't that easily or quickly remedied. Now, 100 years later, there were still constant quakes and volcanic activity. Ryan had seen and experienced hundreds and hundreds of such events throughout the length and breadth of Deadlands, mostly very minor, scarcely even worth mentioning. But this one was in a different league. Even above the thundering crashing of the quake, Ryan was aware of a different sound, as the dolphins all went crazy. Out across the open expanse of scrub and sand, the gasoline fire had almost died away, with only occasional little bursts of purple and orange flames dancing around the blackened wreckage of the two wags. Yeovil and the survivors of his gang were out of sight, scattered among the dunes. The earth's rumbling faded away, but the ground was still vibrating and twitching. JB looked at Ryan.
Think the worst of it's over?
I don't know, but the clouds out in the ocean look real bad. If it's happening under the Atlantic as well, then there could be all sorts of shit coming our way.
One of the male scientists lost his nerve, running like a headless chicken, his mouth gaping open, straight out of the gate, which now sagged crookedly on broken hinges. Mildred made a half-hearted effort to restrain the man, but the ground was still moving like it had turned to oatmeal, making it almost impossible to maintain balance, and she just missed him. Ryan watched the staggering, stumbling figure, wondering how long it would be before one of Red Jack Yeovil's gang of killers noticed him. It was about 30 yards, and three blasters opened up more or less simultaneously, kicking the scientist onto his back into the shifting sand. In the general confusion and near panic, the death went almost unnoticed. The quake was now throwing up great clouds of blinding dust, making it impossible to see more than a dozen yards, with visibility shrinking all the time. Tomlin appeared from the orange haze.
Ryan! Ryan!
What?
Harry says there are big waves breaking up the sea. Says the boats have all been turned over.
It occurred to Ryan that the natural forces were combining on their side to help them toward a possible victory, apart from the unfortunate fact that those same natural forces would also probably kill them all. He beckoned the other six around him.
Their boats are sunk. Their war wagon's gone. They lost over half their men and women by now. There can't be more than 15 or so left, plus the one small wag. Best chance we got is to stick real close together and go out after them.
JB nodded, holding onto his fedora with his left hand.
I'd be there ready to cut and run.
Could try for that wag. Take it and head north. Straight out to the redoubt before the whole of the Keys vanishes.
Tomlin loomed out of the whirling insanity, staggering as the earth tipped and lurched to right and left.
You're leaving us? You can't!
Tomlin started to lift the M16, and Ryan shot him through the chest, firing the Stire from the hip, the force of the heavy bullet knocking the scientist off his feet. Tomlin tottered backward, his arms flailing, disappearing into the sandstorm.
Now! Miranda's...
Michael realized there was no one to speak to. They had all taken off. He took a few hesitant steps toward the heart of the Institute, nearly falling over the corpse of Tomlin. A jagged crack opened up in front of him, splitting the concrete path into 10,000 splinters, revealing a deep, smoking cleft in the dirt beneath, releasing a strong gush of sulfur that made the teenager gag. For a dozen tremulous, racing heartbeats, Michael stood still, keeping his balance against the moving ground, as easily as he had on the reeling boat. It was impossible. The pounding noise and the total blinding chaos convinced him that Ryan Cawdor had, as usual, been right in his instant decision. There was nothing to do but run for it. As he hesitated a moment longer, the quake stopped with a jarring abruptness, and Michael was able to see over the tangled wreckage of the tumbled buildings of the Institute, the open expanse of the Atlantic.
Mother of the Lord!
It was as if the surface of the ocean were a huge sheet of gray-green, being shaken by the giant hand of a fractious child. It was moving in monstrous ripples, some of which appeared to be 40 or 50 feet high.